Welcome, everyone. Thank you all for joining us. It is 6 o'clock in the evening in California time, 9 o'clock Pacific, excuse me, Eastern time today, May 11th, 2017. And this is Dr. Will Cuddle. We are gathered now for our third Thursday of every month, World Peace Diet Circle, which is the second Sunday of the month, unusually. This is very rare that this happens, but this particular month of May 2017, we won't be around next Thursday. We'll be in China. So I'm so glad that you have all been able to be flexible with your schedules and to join us for this call. I apologize for the inconvenience and try not to ever let that happen, but sometimes these things happen. There's no way I could do this from China. It's enough of a challenge to do it from California. So, but it's great to gather like this. I'm really delighted that you're with us. I'm grateful for this opportunity. And as you all know, this is an opportunity for people who are World Peace Diet facilitators who have gone through the training, either the mastery training or facilitator training, or who are going through the training, to have a safe space to discuss the issues of the day of vegan living and being more effective in our advocacy of thriving as vegans in a not-yet-vegan world, and to explore and share our ideas together. So if you have anything you'd like to say this evening, the way to do that, everyone's phone is muted, but if you press *6, that will effectively notify me here on the little website that you have raised your hand, and I can unmute your phone, and then you can speak. So that's the basic idea. It's an opportunity for you to ask or questions or make comments or open things up to me or to the group that you'd like to have discussed that are relevant. And so I'd like to begin our time as we normally do, which is to just take a couple of minutes and turn our attention within as we begin our time. So let's do that now, please. Wherever you happen to be, if it's convenient, you can just maybe close your eyes, and if it's not, then certainly don't. But we're just feeling our connection for a minute with each other, giving ourselves thanks for that, for this connection in spirit and in awareness and consciousness and aspiration, that we are grateful for the opportunity that we have to be together in awareness today, this evening, and we're grateful for each other and for all the efforts that each of us are making to help raise consciousness on this planet so that we can evolve out of the systemic violence that our society practices towards other animals and indoctrinates all of us into participating with that. And so we're grateful for the efforts that each one of us are making and for the efforts that others are making, those that couldn't join us. And there will be, of course, quite a few people joining us just listening to the recording later who live in Europe or couldn't make it tonight or in Australia or whatever. And so we're grateful for this whole circle, the World Peace Diet Circle, and we're grateful knowing that this circle is growing and expanding, and that this circle is connected to many other circles of advocacy and awareness that we're connected with peace movement people, social justice and environmental movement, and all kinds of advocacy movements for animals and for human beings and for future generations and for ecosystems, that there are so many ways that we humans can discover to question the ongoing narrative of exploitation and violence towards other living beings, and that we can awaken out of that ourselves. And as we do that, we can help plant seeds of awareness in others as well. And this is a wonderful way to spend our human life on this planet, the precious opportunity of a few decades that we all have. So we give thanks to everyone who has come before us, all the great sages and advocates and activists from cultures all over the world that have worked hard to heal humanity's woundedness and delusions and bring light into the darkness, and those who will be coming after us, and knowing that we are together in a really critical time, that this generation right now, these years and these few decades that we're here, are obviously times of enormous change and responsibility for all of us to live our lives as consciously and compassionately and ethically as we possibly can, not only for the benefit of ourselves and others, but really for the benefit of all beings. We give thanks also for the beautiful celebration of life on this planet, the other animals who are celebrating their lives, who are waiting for us to awaken, for all the human beings who are working and living their lives more consciously, and for the children who are coming in, that they may be spared the violence of being forced to eat animal foods and live in a society where they are also abused in a variety of ways by a culture that's organized around herding animals. So we give thanks for all of these things, and give thanks knowing that all the ripples that radiate out from our being together here on this particular day and this particular time, that these ripples will radiate out into the infinite web of relations and send ripples that send healing and peace to all living beings, whether they're aware of it or not. This, by making an effort to clarify our own understanding and to live our lives with more awareness, we help raise the consciousness of humanity. And just as the ocean tide rising raises all the boats, this activity also raises everyone up. And so we give thanks for that as well. All right, so bless you all. Thanks for joining us. And we have kind of a pretty much open time in front of us here. I don't have anyone coming on like we've had the last few weeks to speak with us. We've had some wonderful people, actually. I was in touch with one person I would like to have speak with us, and there's a few people I kind of have in mind that I think are doing great work. One of them is Lee Glickstein. Some of you maybe have heard me mention him. He's a fellow who lives in Marin County. He's looking for a vegan roommate, by the way, if you know anyone in Marin County that would like a vegan place to stay. But I think he's very interesting, just because I'll just mention very briefly. Everybody is familiar with Toastmasters, and quite a few people actually who go through the World Peace Diet Facilitator training program find themselves interested in Toastmasters because it's a good way to hone speaking skills and public presentation skills, and a lot of people feel that they like to be able to be better speakers, public speakers, and so go to Toastmasters to do that. And Lee Glickstein was never comfortable with Toastmasters. He always felt that it was really a little bit artificial, I guess, that it was sort of this dualism between the speaker and the audience, and you had to impress them, and they would kind of critique you as a speaker. And he wanted something more authentic, where you're just sharing from your heart without setting up that kind of dualism. So he wrote a book, and I read it a while back, and it's called Be Heard Now, and he's got a movement called Speaking Circles. And he's recently gone vegan, and he's really loved the World Peace Diet, and he's read the World Peace Diet, and he wants to help people like us vegans be more effective in speaking and doing it in a way that's not scary for us, and doing it in a way where we really share. And his way of speaking is really quite powerful, I've noticed. when he does public speaking. And so the thing is, he's got a Thursday evening thing that he does, so it's a little difficult for him to come on our group on Thursday evening. So I just encourage you to check out his website, Speaking Circles, I think is what it is. And if you're interested to find out more or read Be Heard Now, it's a great book. And if we meet at some point on an evening other than Thursday for some reason, schedule-wise or whatever, then that would be a good time, I think, to have him on. But that was, and then it's also my friend Bob Isaacs, and I think we'll have him on probably at some point just to speak with us a little bit. He's the founder of Dharma Voices for Animals, which is the Buddhist, only Buddhist organization that's promoting compassion for animals, believe it or not. It's the only one apparently in the whole world, he says, specifically focused just on that. And they're doing quite a lot of good things, and I've been working with them somewhat too. And so just to let you all know, there's a number of things I would like to cover myself that I would like to respond express. And then also there are a couple of specific questions that people have asked me to respond to as well over the last, it's only been 3 weeks instead of the usual 4 weeks since our last meeting. But I do have a few things that have been requested, so I thought I would address those. And then if there's anything you would like to mention, please do so. So basically, the reason we're not going to be meeting this coming Thursday is because I'll be in China, and it's been really very inspiring to be in touch with the people in China the last few weeks to hear how well the arrangements are going for the China lecture tour. I'll be going, this time I'll be going by myself. Madeline won't be going with me. And so it'll just be kind of a quick, I'll be flying out from San Francisco to Shanghai, giving a lecture there, and then flying down to the southern part of China, Guangzhou, which is the old word for it was Canton. Cantonese, you've heard of Cantonese cuisine, well, that's Guangzhou. And Guangzhou is a huge city, and it's in very, I think, probably really hot and humid this time of year. And there's a large Buddhist temple there, and they are sponsoring this trip. So they're actually paying for my flight and helping out financially with arranging things and doing the promotion and all of that. And I've been told that they're really interested not only in the Dharma talk, but also in a concert. And then there are other groups in the area, Guangzhou, and also there's another city, Shenzhen, which is in that area. It's sort of between Guangzhou and Hong Kong, which is a big city. It's kind of grown super fast, very quickly from very, you know, just in the last, I don't know, 15 years, it's jumped up to, I don't know, a gigantic city of, I don't know what, maybe 15 million people. They are also, I'm going to be speaking there, and it's been great to see that they are telling me that they are planning on between 800 and 1,000 people coming to my lecture and to my concert in both cities, somewhere between 800 and 1,000, or between, I think in one of them it's between 500 and 800. And then there's other lectures in southern China. Every single day I'll be doing at least one or two events and taking trains to different cities in southern China over the next week. And then going slowly back up to Shanghai and then flying back out of Shanghai. So it's about, close to 2 weeks. I think it's 12 days. And a lot of events, and but really big turnouts, it looks like. They've already got commitments that these are going to be large halls with lots of people. And it was nice to hear the other day that the World Peace Diet is selling very well, that someone who's getting married. This is, of course, it's called the simplified Chinese version. and someone who's getting married, I guess a couple, just bought 200, actually, I guess it was 160 copies of the World Peace Diet. They wanted to give one to everyone who came to their wedding as a gift of love and peace, that they as a memorial to their wedding. So I think it's really great to see this kind of spirit, and my experience last time I was in China really reaffirmed my feeling that there's quite a spiritual component to the Chinese people that is very inspiring and strong. You know, I mean, they love working on the vegan movement, the ones that come to my talks anyway, from a spiritual point of view, and you know, seeing it as part of an extension of Taoism, Buddhism, and other traditions of meditation and harmony with human beings and animals and nature, and that this is really the only way that we can create a world of joy and abundance for ourselves and for future generations. So sometimes I feel in the United States, and especially in Europe, that there's sort of this antipathy to this kind of approach. They don't want to hear that. They want to just say, no, 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 nothing spiritual. We just want to stay rational and keep on that level. But I've noticed in China and in Taiwan, also Vietnam, and wherever we've gone in Eastern Asia, it has not been like that. And the other thing, I guess, I mentioned last time is we're going to India too. That schedule has now been really firmed up, and quite a few cities in India. This will be in the fall, right before we do a tour again to China and Taiwan. And I guess I don't have to say anything about India as far as the spiritual thing goes, but I think it would be interesting to see. But already what I'm hearing from the people is they're very excited. There's a lot of buzz building about the lecture tour that's coming up in India too. Although veganism, I've been warned, in India is a very small movement. It's very new. The dairy industry is so powerful. The dairy, not only the industry, but also just the tradition is so powerful that it's just not that interesting for most Indians to think about giving up dairy. So it's a pretty new movement. It's only been around for the last maybe 10 or 12 years as a movement. And but anyway, it's good to know that there are people working hard, you know, all over the world to help bring the vegan message in wherever they happen to be. And the Japanese translation is making progress too, which I'm glad to see the translation and the publication is Japanese. So it's similar in Japan. I think they've had in the past a very strong vegan movement. I think, in fact, Japan, according to some people, is in a way maybe one of the only sort of cultures where you can really see that they had a period historically that we can point to back before the Meiji Restoration for, I think it was 300 or 400 years, where the whole country and the whole culture was vegan. I mean, it was actually vegan. They used that word. They didn't have to use that word, obviously, that English word, but Shojin, practice of compassionate eating, it was instituted by an imperial decree. At a certain point, they were already as a culture not eating much meat at all, and then when Buddhism got strong in Japan, the emperor said they shouldn't eat any more fish or chicken, and they never ate beef or dairy. So they were pretty much a vegan society, according to quite a few people. I should maybe look into that a little bit more, but I have seen that a few places. So what I've heard, though, is that in Japan, veganism is the movement is quite small and confined just to a few sects of Buddhism. And so it'll be good to, at some point, I guess, see how it's going there. So that's something I wanted to just mention. And I'll give you a report when I come back of how it went in China. So otherwise, let me just jump into these two questions that were asked. And if anyone, any of you have any either reflections that you'd like to share about what I'm saying or about anything else, just as I say, press star 6 on your phone and you can always chime in about these things. So one question that I got quite a, you know, maybe a week or two ago from a person that I, you know, we've been in touch over the years about vegan advocacy and issues of various kinds is a question that comes up, I think, basically for all of us, and that is how to be an effective advocate when we're facing a challenging situation where someone sort of pushes back with information that is contrary to what we think is true, and how to respond, how to be effective in that situation. So, for example, she was giving this example. I'll just sum it up briefly of someone, I think it was an environmental group, a Sierra Club situation where it had to do with Cowspiracy, I think, and the idea that she saw Cowspiracy, and a lot of course Sierra Club doesn't look that good in Cowspiracy, so I think it pushes Sierra Club people's buttons, and so she was saying that, you know, it makes some true points, but it's also not true. There's certain things in Cowspiracy that are not true, and there's websites that are kind of devoted to showing that actually, you know, what Cowspiracy says is exaggerated, or it's not exactly accurate, or there's other scientists who disagree with that, and they say that animal agriculture is not as much as they say, and so forth. So there's definitely that aspect. Another one that is similar, I would say, so this is the environmental, sort of environmental pushback, that there's science, you know, that says that we need animal agriculture, there's even some people, there's that one guy whose name is escaping, we talked about him a couple of months ago, Alan Savory, who claims that animal agriculture, especially having, you know, cows on the land is the greatest thing for the earth, and it helps make the land more fertile. And of course, that flies in the face of decades of research by literally hundreds or thousands of researchers who say it's ridiculous that livestock grazing is the most devastating thing we're doing, really, in many ways around the world. But anyway, so that's the environment. There's also, from time to time, I do get emails from people with a similar kind of pushback that has to do with nutrition. That, you know, go to this certain website. Joseph Mercola recently has been promoting a woman's book, the vegan, some anti-vegan book, and it's strictly pretty much from the health point of view, and there's other people occasionally. There's a number, of course, it makes sense. There's a number of websites that are devoted to debunking veganism on some level. I mean, they're arguing that you need to have certain nutrients to be healthy, certain, you know, maybe it's DHA or maybe it's choline, or there's certain things that they say that some people have a hard time getting on a vegan diet, and some people may thrive on a vegan diet. Other people really are going to have problems, and so they need to eat meat, they need to eat dairy, and you should leave them alone. That's what they need to do. It's, you know, it's just how it is. They need these things, and so people who say that veganism is something that's healthy for everyone are wrong. And so it's a similar kind of a situation we can find ourselves in as vegans when we're sharing these ideas from the point of view of people bring up health or environmental counter arguments, that we can find ourselves wondering what to say or how to approach that, if we should argue, if we should show them something that's different and try to convince them. And so I think basically in these situations, of course, the most important thing I emphasize a lot, as you all know, I think probably, is that the importance of using our intuition in every situation as best we can, because I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to these kinds of questions, that each situation is unique. And it's important for us to tune into the uniqueness of the situation. If there's a certain group we're talking to, a certain individual we're talking to share with them something that they can relate to. And besides using our intuition, the importance of cultivating a positive approach so that we're not finding ourselves having our energy be depleted by these kinds of things, which is really what I think in many ways what the goal is. It's just to sort of discourage us, confuse us, make us less enthusiastic about advocating for veganism. So it's important, I think, not to fall into the trap of becoming either angry and frustrated with these kinds of people, these situations, or becoming sort of doubtful about the efficacy of veganism, because, you know, the good news is that where I'm very solid ground in terms of environmental nutrition, certainly the ethics, it's very rare that someone will try to argue with us on the ethics of the abuse of the animals, although that happens also, of course, and you know, plants have feelings too, or whatever. Or I know my eggs are humanely sourced, or those kinds of things. So we get all these kinds of pushback. But I think the easiest one for people to push back on is nutrition, and the second easiest one is environmental, and so that will happen. And so thing that I've learned over the years is to stay positive in the sense of, you know, avoiding arguing if possible. And if you find yourself in a debate, if this is an actual debate, or sort of a public conversation, then that's different, because you're speaking, maybe not trying to convince that individual. Maybe that individual is unconvincible. You know, they've got their, you know, they've got a stake in saying that veganism is not right for them. And I think it's this is a great saying. I have it actually happened to have it here in the May 2017 resources for the World Peace Diet Circle that hopefully you all have, by Upton Sinclair, this quote. It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon his not understanding it. So, you know, if someone's in the restaurant industry, or if someone's in the animal agriculture industry, or whatever, you know, you're probably wasting your time in many ways. I hate to say that, be too negative, but they're not going to change very easily unless they're open. So, but the point I'm making is, if you're in a debate where there's other people listening in with someone maybe in the industry, then you're not trying to change them. You're basically speaking to everyone who's listening, you know, to all the witnesses and bystanders. So, the most important thing I think to understand and remember is to stay positive, use our intuition, and then tell our own story, and not try to change people, because people resist the feeling that we're trying to change them. So this is difficult. I mean, the whole idea when we go vegan is we think, gosh, you know, my life has changed. It's so much better. I would like other people to also make a similar change for the animals, for the earth, for future generations, for everyone, for me too. I mean, it's a better world for everyone, for sure, if people stop paying people to stab animals and cut down rainforests and destroy oceans and cause utter misery to workers and hungry people, the absolute utter waste of animal agriculture is just legendary. It's a tragedy to be wasting resources and the waste of these lives. I wrote a whole article on that. I think it should be guess what, maybe it was in the, April. I should have it on here. Maybe it's from, maybe it was in last month. I'll double check and make sure. But you know, when we really look deeply into this, we see that we would like people to change. That's a natural yearning that people, you know, if we see someone beating an animal, we would like them to stop doing that. It's, you know, it's unnecessary. They're just harming another being, abusing another being who's innocent, who our heart reaches out to this other being. And so how do we live our lives effectively to be effective to get this other person to stop paying people to torture and abuse and stab and kill and mutilate other living beings? That's the basic thing. And people will resist our example because it causes not only cognitive dissonance but affective dissonance and ethical dissonance. They feel that we are an example of something that makes them uncomfortable, and people do not like to be uncomfortable. And there's also that basic yearning that we have as social beings, as gregarious beings, that we want to be well liked and fit in. And there's no greater social activity than eating food with friends and family. And so someone who goes vegan is moving out of the tribe of familiar people, and that's enormously threatening to a lot of people, inconvenient and socially threatening as well, and also the self-image is being threatened. So it's important to realize that when we talk to people, you know, what we may think is just a rational conversation where we're just talking about nutrition or environment, you know, that's really not what's going on. That's something that's going on the surface. But what's really going on is much deeper. It's the person's self-image. It's their survival as a socially well-liked person in a whole variety of relationships, including intimate relationships like family, marriage, children, parents, groups, social bonding, employment. I mean, it's really enormously powerful, the food as a cultural experience for all of us on many levels, an emotional experience and a identity experience. So I think the best thing we can do is to relate our own positive experience, keeping this in mind, and not get sidetracked, not, I don't like to use sort of a fishing metaphor, but you know what I'm saying, don't take the bait, you know, don't fall for the trap. There's so many ways we abuse animals, baiting them and trapping them and everything else, but don't fall into the temptation to sort of try to fight back on the same level. Like Einstein said, you're not going to probably get too far on the same level. We have to go to another level. And so when someone says, well, I don't think that, you know, there's evidence that, the environment, you know, that global warming maybe isn't 50%, maybe it's only, 8% or something like that, to initially agree and do the best we can not to argue, to say, you're right, you know, I can understand, you know, there are people who like things that point in that direction. And then just immediately try to use I statements. I'm really so glad that for myself that I looked into this also, and in the research that I did, and I think it's something that is just really helpful. I began to see that there are many levels, many ways in which eating animal foods and harming animals, animal agriculture, is harmful to the environment and to our health and really to the animals. And I made a change. I decided to stop eating animals, stop paying for other people to abuse them, and it's been fabulous. I'm so glad that I made that change. And I've learned so many more things because of that. It's just fantastic. And kind of say a little less than more and kind of leave it at that. In a lot of ways, if you feel like you want to address that particular point, then you certainly can, you know, but the idea is to show the bigger picture, I think, is really helpful, to show that You know, agriculture, we're growing enormous amounts of grain that are being fed to animals while people are going hungry, and this is well understood to contribute directly to food shortages and to hunger, and to soil erosion and water depletion and water pollution. There are many sources that show this to be true, and the fact that we now understand that we can thrive on a plant-based diet, all of us as human beings, that the nutrients that we need to be healthy are found in plants, and that any animal who has these nutrients in their flesh or secretions got them initially from plants. And, you know, to talk in this way and to have confidence in this, because this is well understood. And I hope you have a chance to watch some of these videos, What the Health, and it's, of course, there's a new one that's come out, and there's many other ones, or read books that go into this. The World Peace Diet, of course, has quite a bit of information on the Intelligence of Human Physiology chapter. But really, there's so many people who are thriving as vegans. I mean, in terms of, you know, we're talking millions upon millions of people, and it's historically, it's also well understood that people ate minimal amounts of meat and no dairy in many countries or locations, and going back before countries to the gathering societies. And but without trying to change people or convince people, to just share in a positive way, I'm so glad I realized. And then to really put in there, I think, very important point to make sure we always emphasize that, you know, I realized that the only reason I was eating animal foods and I was believing that we need to eat them to be healthy and that it's fine, you know, for the environment, was that I was just believing the official stories that I'd been taught by every institution in my society, that large corporations, governmental institutions, the media, and so forth, all support this narrative. And I realize that it's actually not true, that we can thrive and everyone could eat on much less land and water and petroleum. It's much simpler. It takes a lot less resources. It's healthier, and I'm just delighted that I've discovered this, and then let go. To really have a sense of letting go, that I'm not trying to change you, and I'm just let go. Don't have the sense that I want to win this argument, because we're not going to win an argument. I mean, you know, people, we're in the minority. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, being in the South and, you know, South Carolina in 1840. You can argue with people about slavery, and they'll say, okay, well, you do what you want, I'll do what I want. It's totally legal. Well, everybody's doing it, and, you know, we're not going to win an argument. The point is to plant seeds effectively, and then also to help people realize that this is not something we're doing as an individual choice. This is something that is a social activity that has been forced upon us without our permission, essentially, that we've been compelled. And so to bring that up, that just plant that seed. I just say that over and over again, that one seed that I realized that I was compelled from the time I was a little infant, by very well-meaning people, parents and teachers and doctors, to eat animal foods. And so that's why I did it all these years. And then I realized that it was not in my best interest to do that, and now I'm not doing it, and it's fantastic. And I realized it's not in anyone's best interest, that we're all designed to thrive on a plant-based way of eating and living, and that it's healing for the world. I'm really delighted, and there's more and more information coming out about how this is true, and it's a real healing happening that I'm delighted to be part of. And but to gauge your recipient of your message, to remember, as we also emphasize, that, you know, there's a fundamental agreement that's unspoken in human relations, basically, that which is that people will listen to me to the degree that they feel that I am listening to them. And so if we're just going to talk and not listen, people also don't want to listen, really. So the whole idea is to plant the seeds by listening to them and asking them questions, perhaps, like what makes you feel that way and how do you feel about that, and then share what we understand and plant the seeds and let go. And then I think also to not get bogged down too much in trying to change individuals, because I think the more we can create contexts where we're creating change socially, I think that really helps a lot. So if you can have some kind of like the whole idea in the Ropi Side training is to have a study group, so where people are interested, who are already interested in this in some way, interested in being healthier, interested in reducing their environmental footprint, and interested in compassion for animals, and interested in spiritual growth. So yoga people, progressive people, spiritual people, social justice people, people that are interested in that, to have a, to create some kind of a study group, or to create some kind of maybe a potluck, or to have some kind of writing, or to have just something. I mean, anything that can help give people the opportunity to question, to have a dialogue, to think about, to talk about it in your local church or community center, or any online through coaching. There's a lot of people, I think, we're reaching my experience anyways, we're reaching a situation in our society where this whole subject is becoming much more approachable and much more valid to be discussed. People can't just write it off anymore like they could. There's just too much evidence building up everywhere, so that even the mainstream media, which I detest in many ways, is because it's controlled by the military-industrial, medical, pharmaceutical media money complex. Money being banks and financial institutions. They do not like the vegan message, but they are being sometimes forced to give some positive, message about veganism, just because, they can't just lie 100% of the time. They can lie maybe 99% of the time. So the most important thing is to make our own media, right? To make your own YouTubes, to make your own classes, to make our own books and other ways of communicating, classes and things. And it's a grassroots movement, and to find ways to do that. There's all kinds of ways to be creative. I think, this is a situation where we were born onto this planet. We found ourselves born into a society. When we got here, it had already been going for 10,000 years. It's herding culture. We're born right into the last dying gasps, really, of the herding culture, when it's in its most virulent state. It's just completely devastating everything. The inner landscape of our consciousness and the outer landscape of our world and of our society is just laying it waste. It's so obvious now. And we're born right into it. And so we're raised in it. It's been injected into all of us from the time we're little kids, against our will. And so we've imbibed, in a sense, we've eaten these attitudes of exclusivism and of reductionism and of commodification of life and of competition and of might makes right. And so even when we go vegan, which is a tremendous achievement, really, to do that, and given the enormous resistance we face both externally and internally to do that, we have to remember that we still have within us a lot of these attitudes. And so when we are talking to people, we have a sense perhaps of being judgmental and wanting them to change and critical of them. And so to realize that veganism at a deeper level is embodying respect and kindness, not only for animals but for other human beings, so that our advocacy reflects that. And we can definitely tell our truth, but also remember that essentially we are looked at as a threat. And I talk about this in the last chapter of the World Peace Diet with the bystander victim and perpetrator model, where we realize that in any crime committed publicly, there's always these three roles, and the perpetrator is always hoping that the bystander will just ignore them, just leave them alone, not say anything, and the victim, of course, is hoping that the bystander will do something to help them. And so for us as vegans, we are the only ones that the perpetrators can actually get an example of another way of living, right? I mean, we're living in a society where 97% or 98% of the people are perpetrators. They're taking out their wallets and they're paying other people to stab and mutilate and confine and kill animals. And so they're perpetrators. And when anyone who goes into a restaurant or a store is a perpetrator, directly. I mean, it's indirectly, but it's also directly. It's like someone saying, paying someone saying, $100 and say, go kill that guy. They're directly causing suffering. And so, for us, being vegans, we're automatically viewed by perpetrators with suspicion and as a threat, because we are the only ones who are not perpetrators, and so we're bystanders, we're witnesses to this behavior, and so we are, in a sense, I think we feel this, we're responsible for being skillful in our interactions with these perpetrators, because they do not have to listen to us, in a sense. I mean, the legal system, the media, the corporate system, the governmental agencies, everything, every institution in society is absolutely in their favor. They can keep doing what they're doing. So to somehow be able to awaken more and more people sufficiently that we create a movement that will transform our society into a vegan world requires us to embody veganism in our relationships, that we're manifesting this, that the ends and the means are absolutely identical. We cannot begin to think that we can be exclusivistic and judgmental and critical, and cast people out of our heart and create a vegan world that way. Those kinds of attitudes are hurting. That's the herder mentality. That's what we do to animals by the millions. We cast them out of our heart. We belittle them. We see them as less than us. We disuse them. And so what veganism is cultivating in the trenches of our daily life a sense of respect and kindness and patience, humility, not only in the face of our relationship with animals, but with other human beings as well, and allowing ourselves to change and making an effort to make that change. So that's why I think it's not so much what we say to people, it's really how we say it, the way we say it, and that we embody it as much, what veganism is, as much as we can, and still, of course, give information that's valid and to have confidence in that. So it's important for us to do the research and understand and have confidence in what we're saying. But I think the most important thing is for us to say, to be congruent in our speaking and in our voice inflection and the way we deliver our message. And so that's, I think, essential. And it comes through, I think, even when we're writing. I know it's really sad in some ways today that so much of the way we communicate is done through emails and through blogs and Facebook posts. And you can't really see the inflection in the person's voice, hear the inflection in their voice, or see the nuances of their gestures and facial expressions. So it's like these disembodied heads just talking back and forth, and I think it creates a lot of confusion and ill will, unfortunately, these kinds of interactions. I've seen it a lot. So as much as we can, though, to try to have our vegan attitude even come through our postings and our writings, to have it oozing out as much as we can, I think is really helpful. And so that's what I would say about that. there's more I can say. I mean, I'll say something else, which is, you've heard me say this maybe before, but the importance, I think, of a spiritual practice of some kind, because I think, for example, meditation, bringing our mind back to the present moment in a systematic way, practicing like we do if we practice an instrument. You know, I could never sit down and play the piano fluently without putting literally hundreds or thousands of hours into sitting there and working the keys in my fingers and understanding harmonies and rhythms and melodies. And it takes hours and hours of practice to become fluent in something. And it's the same thing, I think, with our mind. You know, we're taught in our society to be extremely clumsy with our mind. I mean, to just with our emotions, we're taught to try to get what we want, try to manipulate other people, and manipulate ourselves, and push other people around, or try to entice them. Or there's so many games that we play that we're taught to play to steal energy from other people, and to present ourselves and present an image that we think is going to be get us what we want. And all of these things just disconnect us from ourselves. And animal agriculture is about disconnection, disconnecting from animals, disconnecting from ourselves, disconnecting from our feelings and our wisdom. And so what meditation is about is connecting, reconnecting with the present moment, with our own inner feelings and our aspirations, our truth, what it is to be aware right now in this moment, and to just be conscious and be aware. So I think taking time every day, taking an hour a day, let's say, to just sit and watch the mind and be aware, and when the mind goes somewhere, to be aware of what the feelings and thoughts are, and to bring it back, and to question, who am I, or to question what am I, what is happening, what is the source of what I am, to be aware of our breathing and our thoughts and feelings, and to cultivate a sense of gratitude for this precious opportunity of a human life. These two things, I think, really work together to help give us a foundation, and that without this, it's really difficult, I think. It's very difficult because the herding culture is a culture of beings, of people who are profoundly alienated from nature and animals and from themselves. And this is what we're taught. I can go on a major rant right now about this, and I'm trying to avoid doing it, but I would just say, really question the medical establishment, everything about it, the media, everything about it, the governmental agencies, and everything about that, the official stories, all the official stories. We are being bombarded, it's been going on for centuries, but I would say in the last few years, I've just noticed it just getting to the point where it's crazy. You know, there's something called the deep state. You know, something that's running the United States, for example, and I think many countries right now in the world. That's not elected. It's nothing to do with elections. The people who are in power. Eisenhower talked about the military-industrial complex. They're not elected. They tell the president, they tell the military what to do, and the CIA has practiced, that old saying, whatever you practice, you get good at. You know, the CIA has practiced overthrowing governments for decades. They're really good at it. They've overthrown 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 governments. I mean, they can easily overthrow any government. They take control of the media. They take control of the government, and they've done it. You know, in this country, it's done, and it's obvious. And it's not just the CIA. I mean, the CIA, whoever they're serving. So you have to be really aware that the pharmaceutical industry, the medical industry, the media, the food industry, the agribusiness industry, the financial institutions, the banking institutions especially, they're operating with an agenda that concentrates wealth in the hands of a few and keeps people deluded and fighting and separate and disconnected. So for us to be successful, I think, in living our life, a life of meaning, and being successful as advocates, we can't just sort of do the outer work. We have to do inner work to connect with our own inner wisdom, where we don't listen. We're able to. There's an old saying in the Buddhist tradition of being like a swan. A swan is a mythical creature. I mean, a swan is not a mythical creature, but the swan supposedly can put her bill into milk and extract only water from the milk. Right? That's the saying of a swan. In other words, a swan can get what you really want out of the milk. You don't want the milk. You want the water. So she can get the water out of the milk. And the idea is, you know, we can be like a swan. We can find the essence, the truth in what is coming in through our senses, and not take in the toxic delusion that is being, we're being bombarded with. I mean, we are being so bombarded with it nowadays. It's ridiculous. Lies upon lies. And what I'm seeing, you know, with this demonization of Russia, for example, the demonization of people who question vaccines, I mean, you know, these are things that are going to really will destroy everything very quickly. I mean, you know, the United States is at the point now, for example, this has never happened in my lifetime, where we're basically telling Russia that we will attack them with a first, you know, our first strike nuclear weapon. That we're going to attack them with a nuclear weapon and try to destroy their country. That we can block theirs coming back. I mean, this has never happened. There was always mutually assured destruction, we would never do it because we knew they would sit back. Well, now the latest, what's happening now is, and yet it's not covered in the media. No one knows about it. We're in an extremely dangerous situation, besides global climate destabilization and all these other things, but just that. I mean, this is a form of absolute insanity. This is herderism taken to its ultimate conclusion, where we just use our technology to completely destroy virtually all living beings on this planet. All the animals and ecosystems will be wiped out in a few seconds based on the tiny minority of people in the deep state of the United States deciding that they want to control the world. And so I think as vegans, it's really important for us to stay clear that our job is to not only through meditation to maintain our inner wisdom and clarity and peace and harmony with ourselves and with our life, but to be a force for peace and healing, to not buy into the hysteria and the delusions that are being trotted before us by the mass media. And that if our society does not go vegan, if we have people by the millions paying for meat-dairy products and eggs and statting animals and eating those animals and maintaining the attitude of disconnectedness and delusion that requires, they're going to elect officials that do that, and the officials are going to do whatever the deep state, which is in place, asks them to do. They're not going to stand up against it, as we've seen. No, the last person that did was John F. Kennedy. So I think you know, we need to have a much higher quality electorate, much higher quality citizenry, and that comes really from each one of us doing the best we can to be ourselves, as God said, the change we'd like to see in the world. We can't change anybody else. You know, we can change ourselves, and to realize also the wounding that people have endured. That's very important to understand. You know, we have been all wounded being raised in this society, and it's a wounding that's very similar to what animals go through that are born into animal agriculture. You know, it's very similar. There's so many similar things. I was thinking about it this morning. You know, when we talk to people, you know, that's the background. To this question, someone says, "Well, what do I say to someone when they say, well, you know, there's information that shows that animal agriculture is really not that bad for the environment, or not that bad. You know, it's really good to eat some meat and you get some vital, nutrients." To realize that we have been so shut down. So one of the things I think that meditation can do that's very helpful is it can help awaken the pineal gland, which is essentially in our brain. This is sort of a brain thing, but you know, essentially, you know, we have all been born into a society that from the time of little infants, our body is really abused terribly. You know, and it's well understood, I think this is pretty well understood, that toxic chemicals like aluminum and mercury and fluoride are they're neurotoxins. And so when you have all the water supplies, for example, are filled with fluoride, which is a known neurotoxin, which there's a lot of evidence that it just basically blocks the pineal gland. And the pineal gland has been well understood. I mean, I've studied meditation and spiritual traditions for 40 years. I mean, this is well understood to be sort of analogous to the sixth chakra, of which is spiritual insight. The pineal gland opening, if it gets shut down, it gets shut down when we're born into the society and we're vaccinated. And vaccines, from my point of view, I mean, this is something I don't like to talk about too much because it's so, I had a Wikipedia. I was listed in Wikipedia for 7 or 8 years, the biography on Wikipedia for writing the World Peace Site and all that. And I wrote one little short essay about vaccinations, and within a few weeks, I was gone. I was off Wikipedia. I mean, this is not tolerated, anyone talking about vaccines. So don't record what I'm saying now. I mean, don't anyone put it out there, because I think it's just, unfortunately, it's something we can't talk about really publicly, because vaccines are so toxic, but they're definitely not vegan. I mean, they are, I could talk a long time about the hideous ingredients in vaccines that come from human fetal tissue and cow fetal tissue. The abortions, I've written articles about that of dairy cows, that they're, how they take the serum out of the calves' beating hearts to put in vaccines, and chicken and pig and monkey. There's so many animals that are bred and abused and confined and killed and horribly mutilated for the substances to create cultures of germs and viruses and bacteria, disease, that are then put into these vaccines. And then there's adjuvants, which are added to the vaccines so that they work. And there's formaldehyde and aluminum and mercury, preservatives and MSG and many just they're so toxic, and then they're injected into the vein, into the arteries. So you don't even have a chance to somehow defend yourself. It's not like eating it. I mean, it goes straight into the artery of a human being, an infant. I mean, when I was a kid, it was bad enough. I get 3 or 4 of these things, I guess, growing up back in the 50s. So I remember getting measles and getting chicken pox. It was a natural thing. It wasn't any big deal. Mumps. We didn't have vaccines for those things. We had for polio, I guess, and smallpox. But think of it. I mean, chicken pox, that comes from chickens. These things, these are all of these diseases that these vaccines are supposed to be fighting against, essentially all of them come from human beings having animals, confining animals. They're zoonotic diseases. Zoonotic diseases are diseases that are passed from animals to human beings because we're confining them. Smallpox, chickenpox, all these different kinds of poxes, and diphtheria and whooping cough and mumps, and these are all these various flus, swine flu and bird flu. I mean, all these, they're all from animal agriculture, so we confine these animals, then we torture animals, we create these toxic vaccines, we stick them into pure innocent babies. In 1989, Congress passed a law saying that vaccine manufacturers would not be liable for harming people. And after that, a huge disaster happened. There was no autism when I was a kid. I mean, it was like 1 in 10,000, less than that. In 1988, before this law was passed, autism was 1 in 10,000, and now it's up to 1 in 80. There's clear, devastating effects on the nervous system of human beings from these toxic, horrible vaccines with tortured animal cells and toxic substances being injected, and you can't talk about it. You're not allowed to question it. And they don't even have to, no vaccine has to even be tested. They don't even have to do trials like they do for drugs. It's just considered okay. They just make a vaccine. It's never tested, and it's just used on the public. And there's been literally billions of dollars worth in settlements, paid by taxpayer funds for abused people. So the point I'm making is, that our pineal glands are shut down, our basic intuition and wisdom is shut down by the assault on infants, all of us as infants, by toxic chemicals from the medical industry, and then not to mention what's in the food and water and these toxic chemicals that are being forced upon us. And they make it difficult for people to access their inner wisdom. And so that's what we're dealing with. I mean, when we're talking to people, we're talking to wounded people, very seriously wounded people who have a hard time making connections because they've been wounded. So it's important for us to be compassionate and understanding of the situation that we find ourselves in and act as wisely as we can in the situation to share these ideas and to clarify our own mind. By meditation, we can actually heal. We can purify the pineal gland by moving to a plant-based, organic, whole foods, you know, healthy way of living and eating and getting exercise and fresh air and so forth. Our body and mind will heal. We'll find our intuition coming back. We'll find our pineal gland activating again. We're making connections. We're getting inspiration and intuitive understanding and looking deeply. And we have more confidence and more joy and happiness and gratitude in our lives because we're reconnecting to our inner wisdom and we're healing our nervous system. And that's why that's one of the reasons meditation is so important, because otherwise we're just operating the way the system is designed to drive us, to keep us busy all the time, to keep us checking our cell phones all the time, to keep us checking not only computers, but you know, just all of the environmental pollution, the electromagnetic fields, you know. Really be aware of this stuff. I think it's important. You know, when we moved into this house, we lived in an RV for the last 20 years, but we moved into a house and they had a smart meter here, and we told them, you know, get rid of it. And they didn't want to. And then we had solar panels put on. We got them to get rid of it. We had to pay $10 a month to have some guy come out in his little pickup truck and read our meter. And they, you know, and then when we had solar panels put on, then they said, you have to have a smart meter because, you know, we have to, you know, it's against the law not to have a smart meter because it has to feed into the PG&E, you know, to the utility company. They have to monitor that you're not, you know, using your solar energy the wrong way, something like that. So we had to do a major fight, you know, to say, no, we're not going to have a smart meter because, you know, I just think we're being bombarded with toxic electromagnetic fields with those things, and it's bad enough having Wi-Fi. You know, turn off the Wi-Fi when you're not using it. You know, we should really take responsibility for our environment and for our consciousness, for our neighborhoods. Don't believe that the corporate, financial, governmental complex has our best interests. It absolutely doesn't. And to create alternative possibilities to support people who are activists that are working to make a better world in whatever way that they are. And we're all working together. And I think clearly the abuse of animals is the gigantic driving force underneath everything, the disconnectedness and the toxins and violence that we're eating and causing, boomerangs back, you know, in every way, in these other ways, all these things, you know, the toxic chemicals in the sky from chemtrails, all these different things. These are things to be aware of and to do the best we can. But the most important thing, I think, is to understand that the media is not going to tell us these things, to connect with our intuition, to do the inner work that will help us to do that, to create contexts of meaning and support, to create networks of support where we're not only supporting other people, but we're being supported because we really need that. I think that's why I love this circle. You know, it's really about having an opportunity, a forum, a safe space to share these ideas with people who are already basically on the same page without having to justify ourselves. And I think the time is coming when there'll be more and more people who are awakening. I think my feeling intuitively is that there is a wonderful awakening of humanity happening. And even with all of this woundedness, people are still awakening. You know, we're still, you know, it's beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful to see the power of this, of the spirit. And it's much more powerful than anything material. It can just, it can heal cancer and toxicity and so forth. We can do it. And we have to understand that, but we need to treat other beings with respect, and that means treating animals with respect, and that's why going vegan is the foundation of everything. That's the piece that is most critical, because billions of animals and wildlife and future generations and ecosystems are most powerfully damaged by eating animal foods and by products like vaccinations and leather and silk and wool and meat and products tested on animals, to do the best we can to allow our lives to be statements of justice and kindness. And then when we speak to people, there'll be a sense of congruity in our words that will be effective. So that's my long answer to that question. And it's a question that we all deal with. I deal with it constantly. It's just a basic, it's a very important question. So another, the other question I mentioned, I said there were two, is a question that's very similar. One of our World Peace facilitators wrote to me an email actually just right before the call saying how Physicians for Social Responsibility, which is an organization that I have supported for at least 30 years. I love it. You know, Physicians for Social Responsibility, that was Helen Caldicott. You know, they were the ones back in the 1980s, you know, having huge demonstrations, making a stink about the devastating effects of nuclear war. Well, you know, and that was back when there wasn't, when it was, you know, it was a problem. Obviously, the United States and Russia had these nuclear arsenals, but we had much more sanity going on. And today, as I was just saying, it's infinitely more dangerous. We have complete crazy people in the White House, or not in the White House. I mean, in the White House for sure, but behind the White House, the deep state. And even though the Russians are, you know, Putin just gave a speech yesterday, or the day before yesterday, appealing to the world to remember that what happened in World War II. You know, they lost, it was a devastating, 17 million Russians were killed, at least, or 20 million Russians were killed. I mean, it was an incredibly devastating war, and that the Nazi mentality of domination, exploitation, of racial superiority, and of hubris, that violent mentality went on to cause so much suffering. It was supported by the banks and the media. It was supported, actually, by the Bushes, and as we know. But also, it was allowed to happen because the other countries in the world were not united. It was kind of chaotic, and he was saying that we have the same situation today, that the countries of the world are not united. We're allowing this chaotic international situation to happen, and if we don't unify around a yearning for peace, that devastating things will happen. And so anyway, Physicians for Social Responsibility, I always admired them for being on the forefront of protecting the Earth from nuclear war and protecting people from nuclear radiation. And yet this woman who's in one of our facilitators, she was saying that she's going to one of their meetings and they're eating meat. You know, they're all eating meat. And so she's trying to help raise awareness with them, writing them an email, writing them letters, talking to them one-on-one about how in alignment with their values it would be to be vegan, to only offer vegan food, and modifying the Animal Place. We talked about this, I think, last month. That Animal Place has this document on their website. We had a link to it. And it's only really for humane organizations. There's humane organizations like local humane societies and things that are still serving meat when they're raising money for dogs to protect dogs and cats. And she's saying she's actually, you know, editing that document so that it's applicable for organizations like Physicians for Social Responsibility, which I think is a great idea. So, but the basic idea is to make a case. You know, it's so important to make a case. And I think, you know, she did a beautiful job actually in writing her email, where she talks about the fact that she's, you know, she's requesting vegan and that it would be really advantageous to the organization to have congruity with and offer this, to have everything be vegan and that they're serving, because eating animal foods is directly contrary to the ideals of peace and harmony and health, which Physicians for Social Responsibility is actually advocating for. So this is a situation in which we find ourselves in all the time with Unitarian churches and Sierra Club and all these groups that you would think would be on the vegan bandwagon. So to just continue to make our case with respect, talk and by our own personal example, and raise awareness. And I think also we have to be willing to be somewhat disruptive too. You know, that saying by Emerson in the World Peace Diet, that people long to be settled, only to the degree that they are unsettled is there any hope for them. You know, that we are here to be disruptive. I mean, that's okay to be disruptive, but it's to be disrupted in a respectful way. That's the key. Our presence is disruptive to say this is something that's important, to raise our hand, to ask the question, to not shut up. You know, remember, the perpetrator wants bystanders to shut up, look the other way and not say anything. We have to absolutely refuse to shut up. We have to be absolutely willing to open our mouth and speak, and to do it in a way that comes out of this congruity that we have, where we're looking at them with eyes of kindness and understanding. They've been abused. We've all been abused. They've been being raised in this society. This is a society of violence, unfortunately, and it's been going on for thousands of years. We have a few decades, we're born into it, we can wake up enough that we can understand this ourselves, and then we can contribute to healing by healing ourselves. And so that's the key, I think, the two key things, healing ourselves, and then from that healing, ongoing practice of healing, to improve our advocacy. And that as we do that, we'll know what to say, we'll know how to say it. We will naturally become a movement that is enormously influential and powerful, because we're appealing to the best in people. We're taking the moral high ground in every situation and appealing to the best in people and reminding them and causing questioning to happen, causing people to question the underlying ideas, and out of that creating political and economic changes, you know, more and more everything. You know, we have a political party now, and we have more and more financial clout as there are more vegans. There's just more foods. There's more understanding. There's more media. There's more YouTube. It's just becoming an unstoppable movement. It is an unstoppable movement. And to remember that we are part of an unstoppable movement that is based on the core truth at the very core of the universe, of the. There's one life living through all of us, and that as we serve that life, we feel the joy and gratitude that are our true nature, and to let that motivate us. Whatever the outer circumstances are, that the spirit that we are, the truth that we are, can never be damaged. That is eternal. That's our true nature. So we're here to learn and to grow and to contribute to the healing of our planet and of our world, and to realize that we must question the media, the official stories, the narratives, the official story about everything, especially if it has to do with promoting the pharmaceutical industry, which, you know, you got to remember, the meat, dairy, and egg industries are opposing the vegan movement, but the pharmaceutical industry is opposing the vegan movement with a lot more money and a lot more viciousness, and they really oppose what we're doing. And because they make their money from pharmaceuticals for animals, for sick people, and veganism, it questions all of that. So so that's why we have to realize it. You know, the medical industry is probably more dangerous than even the war. I mean, it's really dangerous. It's a very powerful. They make so much money, and they use that money to increase their power and control. So stay healthy and in mind and body, and to use our wisdom to know what is required to do that, right? To be aware of electromagnetic fields, to be aware of toxins in foods, to support local organic growers, to grow our own food, to connect with the earth every day, to connect with water every day, to purify our thoughts and feelings, and to create really as much as we can context within our relationships and communities of peace and justice. Maybe it's through our church, local churches, our local groups, or online groups. So that's kind of what I was on fire to talk about. There is someone who has raised her or his hand. We're just about out of time here, though, unfortunately. But I'll go ahead and really anyone who would like to chime in, feel free to do. We have a few minutes here. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone. I don't have a name. I just have a area code 480.
Hi, this is Andy, and well, thank you so much. You did touch on my question about dealing with people that directly state the opposite of what I know to be true, and I realize and suspect that I didn't handle it as I should, and I'm really grateful to hear what you had to say today. And I have a question. This is my first time doing this thing that you are doing here. And is there a Facebook group? I didn't know if you said there is, like, for support for when we do encounter, you know, people or groups who state the exact opposite and they're teaching the exact opposite. And is there, like, a World Peace Diet support group on Facebook or something like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, we do have the Facebook group. It's a closed group, and it's World Peace Diet Facilitators. So if you just do a search, World Peace Diet Facilitators, and then you know, sure, request me in, and then I will accept you, and then you can be in the group. And it's a closed group. We're careful of who we allow in the group, and you can you can talk, you can ask questions, you can, you know, there's some great conversations that happen there.
I would love that. And definitely. Can I just a couple more things? First, thank you for touching on the vaccines and so many of these other topics that everything you touched on, I'm like, oh my God, yes, yeah, and I was so grateful to hear all of it. A couple things. Do you have health insurance, and do you typically recommend it? Because a lot of people claim they have to pay so much for health insurance, and health insurance doesn't cover these other so-called vegan doctors. And so,
right,
I've heard a lot of doctors don't even ever go to doctors that are vegan anyway.
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. No, I don't have health insurance. I haven't had any health insurance my entire life. I had a little bit, I guess, when I was working as a teaching college. They sort of forced me to have it. They said, here, but I didn't use it. And, but for the last, I don't know, 25 years traveling, giving lectures and talks and things, no, I don't have any health insurance. I have to pay a fine every year because I don't have it, but that will only go for a couple more years, and then once I'm 65, I won't have to worry about that. But, you know, I kind of don't have it. I don't like to have it because I don't want to pay into something that I feel is, kind of goes against my ethics. But that's just me. I definitely don't, you know, say, I don't recommend. I mean, it's up to everybody has to make, it's a very personal decision. You know, so it's really up to you, but Madeline and I have chosen not to have health insurance.
And obviously you haven't needed it probably. You probably haven't had to go to doctors, right?
No, I haven't gone to a doctor in 40 years.
Okay. Another thought, since you touched on vaccines, all of these countries that you visit, are any of them requiring vaccinations to go visit, or are there certain ones that do?
Right. So far, none of them have required vaccines, and so that's good. But I think, you're right. I mean, that could be a factor. You know, if there was a country where they said, oh, you have to have a vaccine, I'm not sure what I would do if I really wanted to go there. You know, it would have to, you know, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't get vaccinated. I wouldn't do it. I mean, I wouldn't do a vaccine, but maybe you can get, maybe, I don't know, maybe there's a way around it. Maybe you can get a doctor to say you don't want one. I don't know if there's a way around it.
Religious reasons or something, yeah.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Maybe I could get around it. But, yeah, there are those kinds of things. I actually wrote a release for someone, a woman. She wrote me a while back. She's a vegan, and her daughter was required to have a vaccine to be in school, to be vaccinated.
Uh-huh.
And she couldn't get out of it. You know, the daughter couldn't seem to get out of it. And I said, well, you know, I'll write a letter as a Buddhist priest. So I did. I wrote a letter to the principal of the school and said that vaccinations are go contrary to the teachings of Buddhism, which is based on compassion for all beings, and vaccines are inherently abusive of animals. You can never have a vaccine where you're not killing and maiming and torturing animals. So we're against it ethically. And he wrote me back, the principal did, and he said, well, I don't know. I mean, I Googled it online, and the Dalai Lama, he recommends getting vaccinated. And then so I wrote back, and I said, you know, Buddhism is like any religion. I mean, there are, you know, different beliefs within Buddhism, but that's his opinion. But, you know, the tradition I'm in, which is the Korean Zen tradition, no, no, no. I mean, it's not. It's a vegan tradition. We try to minimize cruelty to animals. That's part of our religion. And so the lady, the mother wrote back to me, and she said, oh, thank you so much. You know, my daughter did not have to have the vaccination.
Oh,
it worked.
That's really cool.
So you got to stand up for these things. Oh. I think we have to, because it's really important. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. All right. Thanks. Thanks so much, Andy. Yeah. I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining. And I did get a little bit onto a rant there, unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever. I'm not sure. I guess I'm so grateful, though, that so many people are doing wonderful things. I did get an email today. If anyone, just since this topic did come up, there was a while back. Let me see if I can see it here. There was a I'll put it in the there was a summit about vaccinations. I watched a little bit of it, but I just got an email that this whole summit. The summit had interviewed some really amazingly good. There was an interview with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And some other interviews with doctors about vaccines. It was all about vaccines and really questioning, you know, whether we should be required to take them, and really questioning the effectiveness of them, the damage that they do. And then, of course, it costs money to get the whole series, but it's available now for free. I'll make a link to it. I can't see it right now, but I'll make a link to that if anyone's interested. I think it's good to just be aware of something outside the mass media. So in the resources for May of 2017, we have the quite a few things. I just want to mention just quickly. It's about time to stop here. It's been an hour and a half, so I'll just do this very quickly. But there's a couple of things that are interesting. Well, number one, when we were at Hippocrates, they took videos of my lectures, and they're now up online on Vimeo, one on the World Peace Diet, one on the Metaphysics of Food. And so I've got the links on. Those are hidden links. The only place you're going to get these links are here, because these are part of a training that they're offering to people that you have to pay money for. So you can't watch these without paying for them otherwise, but you can watch them if you want. It's just they're lectures I gave there. And then there's also my interview with Soul and Wonder, which is a wonderful couple. They're vegans, and they're also quite spiritualist. They were both in Africa as, I think, Peace Corps volunteers, and now they have a blog, which is very good. Anyway, there's an audio interview there, and then also this audio interview I did. Well, there was sort of a debate on vegan education, should we use spirituality or rationality? And so I was the one talking about spirituality. And then there's another audio with Michael Lanfield gave, if you're interested in listening, where Madeline and I share our journey with Lily's group. Lily's group, by the way, as everyone knows, I don't think Lily's with us this evening. I don't see her on the list here. But anyway, she's her group is going on at World Peace Diet Sunday. You can go to upcoming events at worldpeacediet.com and get the call-in number. It's a great reading of the book. It's the fourth reading of the World Peace Diet happening. And there's also Madeline's new polenta with vegetable ragu recipe is up, and my upcoming event in Guangzhou. And then I have this great article on Pay As You Feel, The Real Junk Food Project. This is great. In Sheffield, England, it's a vegan restaurant where you pay whatever you feel you'd like to pay. So it's kind of a pay it forward type of arrangement. A great article on, I'm so glad to see this, perpetrator-induced traumatic stress disorder, on how slaughterhouse workers have PTSD, how this is causing higher rates of crime in places where there are slaughterhouses. So it's very good. Also, this manifesto for a post-materialist science, I think this is very good to see this movement within the scientific community to get beyond materialism. This thing I talked about, nuclear annihilation. Let's see, there's a few things. Veg News is something. But I'll let you can kind of go through these. Is Germany leading the vegan revolution? Oh, this is a great one, too. The second to last one on the first page. Against the assault of laughter, nothing can stand. This is a, I think he's a Spanish language fellow who he goes through. It's really fun. You'll just laugh. You will laugh and laugh, I think. I mean, most people just laugh. He hears these usual excuses that people have, or rationalizations that people have for eating animal foods, like cows have feelings too, and he just laughs, and it's very cathartic, I think, and very contagious, the way he laughs at the sort of the absurdity of these rationalizations. And then this really good article, actually, on how dog food not only contains cows and pigs and chickens, but also dogs. I mean, dogs and cats are being ground up into dog food. We've talked about that a little bit. And some other articles, this guy, the Elmhurst Dairy, how he has switched now from regular dairy to vegan milks. And so anyway, there's some other great articles here. Nice to see this article in Newsweek, to stop drinking milk. That's in mainstream media. That's starting to happen. Great interview with Wayne Shung of Direct Action Everywhere, DXC. The very last one here with Jane Velez Mitchell. I just spoke there in Berkeley last month at the DXC with Wayne Shung, and they're doing great work, I think. So some good stuff here. And so, all right, I've gone on long enough. I think it's time to stop. I'm really grateful to all of you for joining us this evening. And I should have maybe taken a breath to allow some more questions, but really always feel free to press star 6 if you'd like to make a comment. Thank you, Andy, for the question, and thank you all again for joining us. So the next time we get together will be in June, and it's the third Thursday of June, which is the 15th, June 15th. And so I look forward to seeing you all then. I'll let you know how it goes. We're going to be heading right after that on a tour up to the northwestern part of the United States, to Portland, Oregon. And there's going to be also right before that, on the 17th, you know, here in Northern California, Miyoko, I think you've heard of Miyoko Shinner. She's the founder of Miyoko's Vegan Cheeses. She's just opening an animal sanctuary. She's bought land, and now it's a fundraiser. I'll be speaking and playing the piano for this fundraiser in Marin County for this new animal sanctuary in Marin County. So it's just great to see animal sanctuaries springing up everywhere. Also, these are great educational centers, and I've visited animal sanctuaries on 5 different continents, and I think they're a wonderful thing to do. Some World Peace Diet facilitators have created sanctuaries, and it's an amazing thing to do. All right, so I guess we'll close with the prayer circle for animals. I apologize again for kind of going on so long there on that monologue. And however, I think the opportunities we have are so important nowadays, and it's essential, I think, to question these official stories. So we can close with our World Peace Diet, and it's also the Prayer Circle for Animals, Circle of Compassion Prayer, which goes, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. We give thanks knowing this is so, that we are part of this awakening of humanity, this circle of compassion, and that peace is our true nature, and harmony is our true nature. That we see and visualize the animals of our earth free, and all human beings as free, living our lives, creating communities in harmony with the earth, reawakening to our true nature, and living our life as we are intended to on this beautiful planet. Thank you all so much for joining us, and we'll close with the little piece. Let's see, what's a good one here? A short piece. This is a turkey song, I think. We'll close with a turkey song. Bless you all. This is just a minute and a half.